So the presidential election of 1960 is the transition from the fabulous 50s into the counterculture movement. So I've got some information about that on the very, that's the very last item on your fabulous 50s lecture guide. And then we start off with that here as well. Once I give you some background information, so the counterculture movement is the most difficult of the various historical periods, eras, movements to define. So just think back to, the critical period, that time during which the United States was governed by the Articles of Confederation. Pretty simple. Reconstruction, the post-Civil War period during which the United States attempts political, social, economic repair. It's much more difficult to do that for the counterculture era. So we'll see what we can make of it. The counterculture era, the hippie generation was, I'm looking at the lecture guide, an unorganized and assorted attack by young people on what many of them referred to as the establishment. So clearly, you can figure this out. I lived this era. So, you know, there's something special about, from a history standpoint, when the material is covered, I didn't live, Manifest Destiny, so I can't speak about that firsthand, but I can speak about this firsthand. It just gives you a special insight, obviously. So that term, the establishment, referred to the conservative attitude of the 1950s. The meeting of the conformist 1950s and the hippie generation is the biggest intra-culture conflict in American history. It is a slam. Absolutely. There's nothing fluid about it. So, the young people refer to anyone over 30. Don't trust anyone over 30. That was a common statement that you would hear quite often. So, when I was in your position, don't trust anyone over 30. If you've got trouble with somebody, they're part of the establishment. That there needs to be change. And some other slogans of the time, do your own thing, and make love, not war. And the war, of course, is in reference to the Vietnam War, especially. So now, from what you know about the 1950s, conformist, the airport walkway, let's see now. How's that going to work? Do your own thing. It just doesn't connect at all. There's no room for a connection. It just misses completely. So the hippies challenged traditional American cultural values in a number of ways. This list isn't necessarily complete. Attitudes towards sexual experience, experimentation with mind-altering drugs, rejection of materialism and conformity, which are two characteristics you associate heavily with the 1950s. Communal living was popular. The hippie era, if we can identify a focal point, a beginning point, it was the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco. There's a great song. I might have it on the website entitled San Francisco. And that's what that reference is to. The Haight-Ashbury district, that's two streets. And, you know, you can Google it and you have the street sign with Haight and Ashbury. So that district was the hippie district in San Francisco. The young people began to wear the guys' long hair and both gender shabby clothing, some loose speech, and just a generally defiant attitude. And that was difficult for the conformists of the 1950s to handle. Very difficult. America's youth was making history by accident. I ran across that someplace long ago. I really like it. It's one of those statements I wish I could take credit for, but I can't. So you have these hippies who are engaging in certain behaviors. They have certain protests. Well, I forgot to mention clearly the paragraph, the section before. Some of those items are, you know, I guess we've all got our opinions, right? But some of them are, I suppose, you know, questionable behavior. I think that's fair, a fair statement. But then others are a good thing as well. Okay, so America's youth making history by accident. The hippies were horrified by the brutality of Vietnam. They could not connect. For the hippies, the U.S. government was militarily engaged in a war halfway across the world that seemed to have no connection to America. I'm talking from the hippie standpoint. So the whole concept of Cold War just didn't resonate with the hippies. Remember when I told you with the Cold War that defense budgets for the United States and Soviet Union both skyrocketed? And then there was the political cartoon of Reagan, for example. Now, Reagan's not the hippie era, but the political cartoon of Reagan at the dance with military expenditures, while education and welfare and so forth, you know, sit on the sidelines. They're not asked to dance. And so there's that political issue, and the hippies, well, clearly then, want reform to happen at home. They want American dollars spent, well, to make America better. How can we attack the race issue here at home? For example, why do we need to be sending military forces, spending American money, fighting a war halfway across the world, and the only thing we're seeing for it is Americans killed, is soldiers killed? Okay, we'll get to that later on. Appalled by American racism, political and social smugness really bothered the hippies. Disgusted by the dishonesty of politicians, Nixon and Watergate, for example. And there were two big avenues of expression for the hippies. One was through music, and I identified there the Woodstock concert, of 1969, 3 days of peace and music, the greatest rock concert in history. And even if you don't identify with that sort of music, it was a who's who of rock and roll. Imagine if there was a 3-day music festival here in Rapid City. And imagine, I'm going to tell you now, you take out a sheet of paper and you list your 30 favorite performers. And whatever music you dig, 30. I mean, it'd probably take you a while, right? 30. And then I'll just randomly erase 3 of those. So you're down to 27. for $50 for 3 days. That was the Woodstock concert. It was a who's who of rock and roll. There were a few performers who were not there. That's why I said, you know, you take out three. A lot of the big performers were there. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And the other method of expression for the hippies was protest. And the greatest protest of the counterculture era was the Kent State incident. And that's directly related to our involvement in Vietnam. And I'll spend some time on that later. There are some parallels to the progressive era. So you help me work through these then. Relatively short-lived, 15 to 20 years, progressive era and the counterculture. Yes? All right. Uncoordinated and varied assault on the accepted status quo. Well, that's almost word for word from what I have at the top of this lecture guide, so you know it fits for the hippies. How about for the progressives? Yeah, right. Remember, there was no national progressive convention. The muckrakers, as a matter of fact, I'm doing that in my morning classes. Oh, muckrakers are gone. You know, the muckrakers had an area, a topic of passion, and they went with it. All right. Challenge standards from the entrenched previous period. So, yeah. So remember, the progressive era was all about reform. Reform of that bare metal that was hitting America in the face, finally, from the Gilded Age. Made history by accident. Maybe not quite so much for the progressives. I mean, the muckrakers were intentional about what they were doing. Although, I'm not sure that the muckrakers themselves saw the total process. It was, you know, Upton Sinclair is going to expose the filthy meatpacking industry in Chicago and then hope that America takes notice and hope that reform occurs. But still, I would say that there was a little bit more design behind what the muckrakers were doing rather than what the hippies were doing. Spanned three presidencies. Yeah. Because we have Roosevelt, Taft, Wilson. And then for the counterculture, we have Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon. Ford gets in on a little bit, maybe gets gets his feet wet just a little bit on the very end. Three presidencies. Embraced by the presidents. Well, the progressive era, for the most part, was, remember, Roosevelt and Taft and Wilson all stand for reform of various sorts during the progressive era. Maybe not so much, or at least not in such a blanket form during the counterculture era. Some of the presidents will embrace the civil rights movement, for example, but then there'll be a certain resistance at other times, and then Vietnam, I mean, we're there, right? And Democrats and Republicans both were there in Vietnam, so probably not so much. And then supportive American public. No, absolutely not. So I would say that the last two bullets are the big difference between the progressive era and the counterculture movement, which start off, which have a base that's very similar. And I think you could think of the two, you know, in parallel fashion, but there is a significant difference, and I think that's what it would be. The progressive era is certainly not going to divide America like the counterculture did. But then the progressive era didn't have the civil rights issue to deal with, didn't have Vietnam to deal with. All right. So, three presidents of the counterculture era. I have them here. If you printed this off in color, or if you saw it in color and noticed, I've told you at some point, I try to match the music on the website with the topic. Those tunes aren't just randomly selected. They all have a purpose. That's why every once in a while there's none, because I just can't find something that fits. And then, when I do some of these study guides and handouts and so forth, I try to find fonts and even colors that at least for me, fit. And so, here we are, the worst font in the world, and I've forgotten what it's called now, but it's like balloon or bubble font or something, I don't know, but it's the worst font in the world, but it was one of the favorite fonts during the hippie era. And then also, the colors, the hippies were all about, well, you know my peace sign that I have up here often. The hippies were, about bright and obnoxious colors, lime green and radiant turquoise and purple and so forth, yeah. So, all right, Kennedy. Kennedy is, I think you've probably heard this before, the Kennedy administration was often referred to, with Kennedy in the White House, was often referred to as Camelot, King Arthur. And then I added the James Bond thing, because for two reasons. First of all, Kennedy was, just like James Bond, for you ladies, pretty easy on the eyes, right? And also, we associate Kennedy with the Cuban Missile Crisis and, sort of single-handedly defeating the Soviet Union, which I covered, and, that's not a correct perception, of course, but still, there's that certain image, the sort of thing that James Bond does, all right, in his movies. So the election of 1960. Now, interestingly, I have this presentation and this presentation, and there's some similarities, and then there's some information on one and that's not on the other, and vice versa. All right. Election of 1960, here's what's important. The candidates are Nixon, the Republican. Nixon has been Eisenhower's vice president. And he's been a visible vice president. Some vice presidents aren't visible. He has been visible. So he's out there. Remember, one of the keys to possible keys to success in a presidential election, is the incumbent. The incumbent has a little bit of an edge. I mean, I'm right here. Well, Nixon wasn't president, but he was vice president, and was practically an incumbent. All right? And then his opponent, Kennedy, from Massachusetts, the Democrat, was relatively young and inexperienced in terms of politics. So it boils down to what we've said about Martin Van Buren. It was Martin Van Buren's election to lose in 36. Thank you, Andrew Jackson. It was Nixon's election to lose in 1960. And while you know the end of the story, he's going to manage to do that. The big thing to remember about the election of 1960 is the first televised presidential debates. So here is the influence of television. And that, really blossomed during the 1950s. A bunch of this fabulous 50s business was all about the impact of television. And so the two candidates will carry on a series of four debates. And many historians credit the first debate of the four with being the turning point. So Nixon is gradually losing ground during the campaign, just very gradually. Nixon's gaining ground. Nixon was, Kennedy was smooth. Everything about Kennedy was smooth and charismatic. His looks, his delivery, he had a great wit about him. Everything was smooth. Whereas Nixon was not nearly as smooth and had some odd idiosyncrasies. And about this time every year, I take a little time and check some of those out on YouTube. And maybe after the national exam, I can share some of my favorites with you. He was a real target because of his idiosyncrasies and his unique voice for shows like Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live makes fun of every president, but wow, they had a heyday with Nixon. And so I did a couple of those last night, and not that I had time, but I did them anyway, and I was I was laughing. I laughed myself to sleep. The same ones that I have seen, 97 times. Okay, so the first debate. When it's all done, according to the poll, then who won the election? Well, let's see. Those who viewed the election, Kennedy won. But then not everybody could view it. Some people listened on radio. Who won the debate? Nixon won the debate. So clearly then, that visual helped Kennedy. And then the second and third and fourth debates weren't watched by as many viewers as the first. And so bottom line is the presidential debates were credited with Kennedy's victory in 1960. Closest since 1988. About 113,000 popular votes nationwide separated the two. That's next to nothing. In fact, Nixon won more states. Nixon won 26 states, Kennedy won 24, but you know that's not the bottom line. And what else do I want to tell you? And so we have then the first Catholic president and the youngest president ever elected. 43. Wow. I mean, president of the United States and you're 43 years old. So Kennedy enters the White House realizing, he was highly intelligent, realizing that he's going to be viewed by political opponents and by the Soviet Union as an easy mark. I mean, here's, the new guy, relatively unexperienced. We'll be able to walk all over this guy. That's one of the reasons, I think I said this earlier, that's one of the reasons that Kennedy went ahead with the Bay of Pigs invasion, because he wanted to make a mark for himself, I mean, as president, in the Cold War immediately. But backfired on him, right? But then he did it, turn the tables with the Cuban Missile Crisis. So some historians have said for Kennedy as president, it's going to be sort of a on-the-job training situation. All right. Kennedy, so moderate, energetic, one, the most popular, I think it's safe to say, the most popular president ever. In fact, that's what leads a lot of people to believe that Kennedy was one of our greatest presidents. And there's a difference between being great and being popular. So he is somewhat overrated by the general public. So I'm not saying he was a bad president. I'm saying you're not going to put Kennedy in with Washington and Lincoln and Roosevelt. He just doesn't deserve that spot. Had he been in office longer, historians think that might have happened, because about the time he was assassinated, he seemed to be catching on, you know, catching on to the job. The on-the-job training had sort of kicked in, and he had things going. But, yeah, assassinated, and so you don't know. So his domestic package was referred to as the New Frontier. So that would be the equivalent to Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, Truman's Fair Deal. So the New Frontier. I've listed a couple aspects of that. Health and medical care program for the elderly. Aid to education. Tax reduction plan. And in terms of civil rights, integration in the South. There's an account of some important foreign affairs, which, I don't know, this might be about the second time for sure. I was going to say the third, but second time for sure on this business. That's Cold War. I mean, foreign affairs, yeah, that's foreign affairs was the Cold War. Cold War was 95% of foreign affairs for 45 years. So all of that is review. Some important reform by the Supreme Court during the Kennedy administration under Chief Justice Earl Warren. The big one there is Brown versus Topeka Board of Education in 1954. And we spent some time on that with the Fabulous 50s. That reverses the Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal concept that the United States had operated under since 1896. And according to that court ruling, separate but equal facilities in education are inherently impossible. Inherently means just right from the get-go. Others that you probably recognize there, the Miranda rights. When you're arrested, you have a right to remain silent, and on and on and on. There we go. That's Miranda versus Arizona. Everybody arrested has right to legal counsel, even if you can't afford it. One will be appointed for you, and that's, you know, Gideon versus Wainwright. The Engel versus Vital, no precise school prayer. It doesn't prohibit school prayer. It does prohibit a prescribed prayer. Sort of like we do the Pledge of Allegiance every second period. We couldn't do anything, any sort of, you know, uniform prayer in that regard, like you probably do in church, you know, the Lord's Prayer or something like that. Can't do anything like that. That's what that's all about. And then Matt versus Ohio, evidence that seized in an improper manner, even if it's just right there in your face, cannot be used against you in a court of law. And that's been frustrating to law enforcement officials for sure. So if you happen across something that is very incriminating, but you didn't have a search warrant, then, yeah. I mean, you open up the drawer and there's the gun, and didn't have a search warrant, then, you know, there's the gun. I mean, clearly there it is, but guess what? Can't use that in a court of law. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas in 1963. You all know about that. That is one of the events one of the favorite events about which there is conspiracy theories. Did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone? Well, like every conspiracy theory out there, there are some pretty neat presentations. I mean, I've seen a couple on television that. I mean, there are some unanswered questions from the moment, well, I guess, you know, a day or two leading up, well, maybe even more than that, weeks leading up to the assassination, and then the event itself in Dallas, and then the immediate hours, you know, the care for Kennedy. I remember one account in particular, one little bit of this. Apparently, when Kennedy was taken to the hospital into surgery, although from what I understand, you know, I mean, it was such a grave wound that he's essentially dead at that point anyway, but taken to surgery then with plenty of civilian doctors, surgeons, there was a point where they were all told to leave. So a government official barges in, everybody out. And then they were allowed back in, whatever, 5 minutes later. But some of those doctors claim that the wound, Kennedy's wounds, had been drastically tampered with. So that, you know, it wasn't the same when we came back. That's just one little. And so how do you explain it? I don't know. But so you can balloon that to think, well, there was some sort of conspiracy. And there's some other moments there, too. However, here's what I started to say. Every conspiracy theory, you know, can be constructed very strategically so that it seems to be makes sense every step of the way. Be careful about that stuff. And secondly, for every question that is somehow answered in the conspiracy theory, then there are additional questions. So there's no presentation of the Kennedy assassination that from beginning to end seems to fill all the gaps, seems to answer all the questions. So if you like this version, okay. That there's five questions here that are unanswered. If you like this version, okay, but there's six questions here that are unanswered. So just, you know, realize that. And also, the Warren Commission, so that's Earl Warren, will, under the next President Johnson, head a investigative panel that will look over all the evidence, and they will confirm that from what they can tell, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. America wants a conspiracy theory just because of the fact that we're human beings. We like intrigue. We like mystery. It's hard for us to accept that this very popular president was killed by a single nut. We want to make more of it. And so that's why we have a tough time accepting that there was just one assassin. And I would not be surprised if years from now we find out that there were, you know, a couple other people involved, but not some sort of massive conspiracy. I mean, the conspiracy theories have included, well, the Vice President, Johnson, the CIA, Fidel Castro, the Soviets, the Boy Scouts, all kinds of groups have been a part of this conspiracy theory, but none are, you know, tight. All right. Let's see. Whoops.